This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Conventional wisdom tells us that nowadays it doesn't matter so much where you live. You can prosper in Silicon Valley, in the thick of the Rust Belt, or with a cell phone, a broadband connection, and a BlackBerry, you can telecommute from Maui. Writer and economist Richard Florida disagrees. He argues that innovation, finance, and personality types tend to cluster in specific locations that he calls mega-regions. Boswash, for example, the great megalopolis that consumes much of the mid-Atlantic seaboard. Economic activity spikes there in Greater London, Southern and Northern California, and a few dozen more mega-regions around the world. And he contends that where you live is critical to your prosperity and your happiness, in part because he says each of these mega-regions has specialties and characteristics that give them all distinct personalities. In his new book, Florida charts these personalities in the trade-offs for people who prefer to stay closer to home. So recent graduates tell us, where do you want to live and why? And if you're older, how has your decision on where to live affected your happiness and your prosperity? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, we'll talk about the knee, about the open, and about the era of Tiger Woods. But first, Richard Florida joins us. He's a business professor at the University of Toronto, and his new book is titled Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy is Making Where to Live the Most Important Decision of Your Life. He's at the studios of the CBC in Toronto, and nice to have you on the program today.
Neil, thank you for having me with you. I'm a huge fan of the program and a recent relocator from Washington, D.C. to Toronto.
Well, I wanted to ask you about, you use your family as an example of your thesis in your book, not necessarily your more recent move, but starting with your grandparents who emigrated from Italy to New York City, then, as you describe it, the most dynamic city in the world.
Well, you know, my grandparents, all four, emigrated from southern Italy to the New York region and then quickly relocated to Newark, New Jersey, had my folks. I was born in 1957, had me and my brother Robert, gave us great Italian names, Richard and Robert, classic American story, and promptly moved to North Arlington, New Jersey, right smack dab in the heart of Sopranos land. And I was very fortunate. I got a Garden State scholarship to Rutgers College, which enabled me to go to college. And as I tell in the book, my grandparents were mobile. My parents were, and most of the extended family was local or rooted. I've moved since graduating Rutgers 17 times. So in some ways, and I have a PhD in city planning from Columbia, and I've studied place and urbanism. And I think one of the things that motivated me to write this book is I kind of made job moves or moves that were just intuitive, made on hunches. But I realized that my field, economic geography and city planning, had a lot to say to people, including myself, but a lot to say to people about how important this decision to move is, as you said in this wonderful intro, to your job, to your career, but also to your happiness and ability to lead a fulfilled and exciting life.
Which is not to say that had you stayed in Northeast New Jersey, you wouldn't have been happy.
Well, I thought about this, and you mentioned it, and quite nicely. I have enjoyed, as an academic, the fruits of mobility. You have to move in academic life, most of us, to get that first job, to get tenure, to get research support. So I went to University of Buffalo. I taught at Ohio State, 17 years at Carnegie Mellon, visiting professor at Harvard, George Mason University, and now University of Toronto. One of the things, though, is I traded off this rootedness that comes from being around a tremendous extended family. And I talk about this in the book when I married my wife, Rana, who comes from a large Jordanian family in the suburbs of Detroit. And she decided she would move from that environment to Washington, D.C. I then realized not only how much she had given up by moving away from family, but how much I had given up on this 20 or 25 year quest to find my academic role in career. And when we move, increasingly what the book says is in order to experience economic upward mobility, many of us have to be mobile for career, but we also have to realize how much we're trading off in terms of the love and the encouragement and the support of family and friends.
And in fact, there's an economist you cite in your book who says to make up the difference for moving away from that family and friends who you see every day, you'd have to make an extra $133,000 a year.
Yeah, he gets me into trouble all the time because every time I quote that figure, I get attacked. And the usual line of attack is, or argumentation is, that's too low. Not that it's too much, but I kind of used that. I came across that study, and I used that in kind of calculating how much I owed my wife. You know, she relocated six siblings, mom and dad, extended family. And I said, oh, my God, she has given up so much to move to Washington, D.C. And I use that figure. I think it's an interesting figure. I don't know if it's the right calibration. But I use the figure to show people, okay, you may think your career is advancing and you may need to go mobile, be geographically footloose to achieve career success, but realize you are giving up, if not cash income, boy, a tremendous amount of psychic income and happiness.
And nevertheless, you say that in the future, it's going to be more important than ever to make decisions about where you move rationally and as opposed to following your girlfriend or just deciding that, San Francisco looks like an attractive place to live.
Well, my father told me when I was a young boy, my dad only had an eighth grade education. He worked in a factory. He said, Richard, you have to study hard. You're a smart young man, young boy. Study hard. Go to college, get a degree, get a profession. My mother would always caution and say, well, Richard, you know, I married your dad. He only had an eighth grade education. We didn't have a lot of money, but we were so magnificently happy with our family. Make sure you pick the right life partner. Then I came across Dan Gilbert's remarkable book, which I'm sure listeners have read, Stumbling on Happiness. Dan is this remarkable psychologist at Harvard. And he said, you make three big decisions in your life, right? What you do for a living, who you pick as a life partner, and where you live. The rest of the book dissects the first two. And I looked around, and no one had ever really dug in to the third big decision. And I said to myself, this field that I work in, economic geography, city planning, urbanism, has a lot to say about it. Let me see if I could write a book or bring together some of this information to give people a set of guidelines or a framework. And what we figured out is that from a jobs perspective, jobs are clustering. You know, the obvious one would be policy jobs in Washington or high-tech jobs in Silicon Valley. And I talk in the book about music in Nashville. But also these personality types and different kinds of lifestyles are clustering in different cities. So the point I was making is that people have to be very, very cognizant because this decision is going to have a huge impact not only on your economic status, but on your entirety of life outcomes, including your real estate investment. So you have to give it a lot more thought than most people do.
We want to get listeners involved in this conversation. What personality does your city have? What decisions did you make about moving someplace or another, and how did it affect your happiness and your prosperity? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guest is Richard Florida, and let's begin with Heather. And Heather's calling us from San Jose in California.
Hello.
Hi, Heather.
Hi. I think this is a fascinating topic. It's one that it's concerned me for a long time. I grew up in Montana, relocated to the Midwest. We recently moved to San Jose 2 years ago for my husband's job. We'd wanted to leave the Midwest for a while and had thought we'd go east, ended up out here instead of closer to family out east, and this has turned out to be probably the best possible move for his career.
And that was the principal reason you decided to move to Silicon Valley out there?
It was. I would never have considered moving somewhere with earthquakes and high cost of living and all of that without some pretty serious rewards.
And have you been able to meet people who are, well, like you?
It's taken a while. Because there's a lot of new money out here, it sort of seems like people are a little bit more uptight about some of the things, especially with parenting. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I've had a lot of difficulty finding like-minded people that I can get together with, and we don't have to talk about expensive spelling bee coaches for the six-year-olds and things like that. I mean, you have to look to find the people like you, but there are pockets, and you just kind of have to keep looking. It's like anywhere else.
Richard Florida, one of the things you say in your book is that, well, you can work in the software industry anywhere, but if you work in the software industry in Silicon Valley, you're going to make a lot more money.
You will, and not only in initial pay, it's significantly percentage higher than most other average regions, but in terms of your career future, because, you know, the old saying was, if you work in Silicon Valley, you can change jobs by changing your parking space. But, and I think that gets at the nub of the matter. It has what economists like to call a thick labor market. And so there's many jobs, and we know the average duration of a job for any American is about 3 years. So people are much more mobile between jobs. The other thing, though, is in terms of the affordability factor, which Heather mentioned, it may be that San Francisco, Silicon Valley, San Jose appear more expensive to buy into. But there's an economist at Wharton, a brilliant guy named Joseph Giorco. He's the best real estate economist in the United States or the world. And he calls it one of his superstar cities. In other words, if you bought a home in a Cincinnati or a Buffalo, it would stay the same value, maybe go up a little or go down a little. What he's shown over four decades is that homes in San Jose, even if they start off seeming expensive, appreciate at a dramatic rate. Now they go up and down at different times. But the point is that that location decision is partly a career decision, but partly a real estate investment decision. And it's not only that the cheapest, it's not always that the most affordable real estate is the best bet. For the real estate decision alone, it may be that that more expensive superstar market will pay off in the long run as well.
Heather, sounds like you made an interesting choice.
We made a great choice. My husband's career, given his specialty, was not going to go anywhere in Chicago, and this was pretty much the only place where I could see it have taken off as well as it has.
Well, good luck to you and to your husband.
Well, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling.
Bye.
If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Where did you decide to live? How has it affected your wealth and your happiness? Give us a call. And also, if you're just graduating from high school or college and going on to work, where are you thinking about living, and why are you deciding to move one place or another, or to stay close to home? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Richard Florida will be back. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today with Richard Florida about his latest book, Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy is Making Where to Live the Most Important Decision of Your Life. Forget about that degree from Harvard and the love of your life. The key to happiness, he says, is finding the right place to live. Read more about the biggest decision of all in an excerpt from his book at npr.org. Richard Florida is a professor of business and creativity at the Rotman School of Management at the University of Toronto. And all you recent grads, tell us, where do you want to live and why? And if you're older, how has your decision on where to live affected your happiness and your prosperity? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Here's an email we have from Alicia. I'm studying urban planning and find the urban culture in Portland fascinating and a place where progressive thought about urban form is flourishing. I go to school at the University of Cincinnati, where the city of Cincinnati is attempting to build a streetcar system much like Portland's, but overall fails to take any bold steps in changing the urban environment. Since your guest shares the same field that I'm currently studying, I'm wondering if he would recommend Portland, Oregon, as an engaging and progressive city, as has been suggested to me.
Yes, I would. I was just there, in fact. They unveiled their new prosperity index, and actually I hired a fellow who used to do this in Washington, D.C., was a former student of mine, to help lead that effort. Actually, two fellows they hired from the Greater Washington Initiative, so remarkably. But our convocation at the University of Toronto is this week. I was talking to my young research assistant, who is also going to get a graduate degree in urban planning, a master's. He told me that three of his friends from the University of Toronto's graduating class are moving to Portland, Oregon. And the point is, it's in this mega region called Cascadia, along with Seattle and Vancouver, Canada. It's a powerhouse economically, close by, reasonably close by to Northern California and the Bay Area. But it also has a great lifestyle and urban sustainability, environmental ethos. And I think what Alicia was pointing at as well, in this era of rising gas prices and long commutes, people all over this country and the world are looking for a place that's compact, but not only has a great downtown, but a great way of relating to the natural environment. We found that in our research, the cities where the natural environment worked in unison with the built environment, that's where people were really happy. And I think Portland, for a medium-sized community, really defines that. So I think I can give it a very, very high recommendation and would encourage her to explore it.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Joe. Joe with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, Charlotte, North Carolina is probably one of the most prosperous areas on the East Coast. We've got something like 3,000 people a month moving here from the Northeast. And, of course, you know, that would suggest that it is a destination, a place for people to move, young people and retirees and whatever. Plenty of jobs, banking town, lots of money. Unfortunately, what's happened is it has created the kind of overdevelopment and urban sprawl and spikes in crime and not enough seats for kids in the schools. One of the problems that Charlotte has suffered from is lack of identity. In fact, they've actually had Chamber of Commerce meetings where they pull guys in from the university to talk about how they could finally get themselves an identity because this sprawl is taking away from it so much. So, and I've lived here all my life. I left at one point to go into service, came back from overseas in 1970, moved out to California, came back here. Went, I lived in several places, but I made the decision to make Charlotte my home ultimately. And I'll tell you that you can get great restaurants, you can get great entertainment, you can get great everything, but the quality of life here is really suffering badly, even though it's a great destination.
Charlotte, part of the Charlanta region, is that right, Richard Florida?
Yes, it is. Duly named on an airplane flight back from Charlanta to Tor Buffchester, where I live. But we've done a lot of work with the business community and the civic community in Charlotte. And what the caller says is right. There is a lot of introspection going on with regard to what is the image of Charlotte. How does it attract those young, best and brightest professionals? How does it have a great affordable life for families? And one of the things that's really true, and it goes back to Alicia's point, people are looking for more compact, less sprawling. And this has become so timely in the past couple of weeks with gas going to $4 and $5 a gallon. People are now saying this old suburban style is no longer the way all Americans want to live. We need options. Of course, some people enjoy an exurb or a rural area, village or a suburban town, but many more want to be compact. And those cities that can do that, whether that's Portland or Boston or even, you know, Washington, D.C., where I live, where you live, the cities that can offer those options have an enormous edge. I'm happy to hear that the leadership at Charlotte is thinking about it. And it's what a remarkable change, though, that a Sunbelt megalopolis like Charlotte would be thinking about their image, thinking about how to become more compact, more effective, and a more exciting urban destination, not just the fun in the sun suburban destination.
Yeah, but they have one problem that they can't seem to overcome, and that is that more development means larger tax base and more money. So they continue to turn developers loose, and what that does is it continues to take personality away from the city itself.
Yeah, what we've seen where cities go far down that road, what happens? Now, in Charlotte, and I'm not saying this is great, but they are growing enough that they can absorb development economically, even if it damages the amenity and the lifestyle. What happens, though, is when the growth stops, they continue to sprawl. And I have a friend who calls this sprawl without growth. And you see it happening in many places, continuing to sprawl and just moving people from one suburb to the next suburb like pieces on a chessboard. So I think you're right. I think what Portland did was have growth control and made sure that with growth control, they could have a more compact development, which has become a talent advantage and a quality of life advantage for them now.
Joe, we wish you good luck there in Charlanta.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye. Let's go now to Colorado, and this is Hadley, and Hadley's calling us from Niwot in Colorado.
Hi. My husband and I just moved our family from, actually, we did what I think is probably the converse of what a lot of families end up doing by moving close to the job. We had to leave the city and move to a rural area of Colorado. My husband had been commuting for 6 years, an hour each way, to get to work. And we just moved 4 weeks ago, and we're suddenly in this very different environment where I was hearing the caller talking earlier about living in Silicon Valley and not really having found her people. We've left this urban center of very vibrant, very progressive people, very close-knit block of people, and into rural life and take breakfast for the 4th of July and kind of thing. We've 4 weeks and we're suddenly feeling very isolated, and it's an interesting choice. We have a lot more space, obviously, for our three very young children, all under 5 years old.
Was that the principal reason you moved out there?
It was mainly the amount of time my husband had to spend in the car, and I actually consult for the same company 2 days a week, and we had to leave our children 45 miles away in order to come to work. And But it was a big sacrifice for us to move, even given that dynamic. And I guess the thing that was interesting in making the decision is that I always thought, you know, throughout my adult life that you would change jobs in order to be closer to home because the life environment was the priority. However, we are getting to this age in our careers where the commitment to the job and a good job is also very important. And it was a real struggle to make that decision.
Yeah, a decision a lot of people have to make one way or the other, Richard.
Well, Hadley is on to something that's at the kind of root of why I wrote Hoosier City, balancing family life, job and career in place. And it's very interesting. And one of the reasons I built this thing called the Place Finder, it's at our site if you ever want to look at it, at HoosierCity.com. But the reason I built this tool was to enable people to try to balance these criteria. And I heard this story, and Hadley's not extreme, but so many people said to me, well, Richard, I've moved, and I'm not feeling great. I'm feeling a little bit depressed, and I don't know why. And what I came to the conclusion is, it's not about the best city. It's not that New York or Washington or Denver is the best city. It's what's the best place for you. And why we built that tool was to have people go through this process and try to anticipate. And we also say, you know, most people pay more attention to buying a car. And I'm not kidding. Most people spend more attention to buying a car than they do picking a place to live. And I say in the book, test drive the darn town. Go there and spend time. And I know this sounds so simple-minded, but I haven't done it. I'm allegedly an expert, you know, professor. I haven't test-driven my places, and I can know it when they don't feel right for me. I've heard it so many times. Now, Hadley's new and her family's new and they can make friends, but it seems to me a little bit like the personality match isn't quite there, even though the job match is perfect. That's why we tried to write the book, to help people make that decision.
Yeah, and the ironic thing is that the job match happens to be in a very technical company, you know, in satellite imagery, and you know, you would think that something like that would bring you to a place that was very sophisticated and very, you know, progressive and vibrant and everything. And it is a little bit odd to be people who work in that industry and yet be making the choice to live in a culture that is different. Mm. Although I'm still optimistic. I do feel...
You should be. You've only been there 4 weeks.
...educated people up here, so...
Good luck to you, Hadley.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Robert in Tucson, Arizona. I'm a regional planner, too. What's the consequence of moving away from North America? Are there overseas locales that promise greater opportunity? Are there any that don't? Which are on the top of the list? How does this correlate with popular polls regarding best city to live in? I'm leaving Tucson for Malmo, Sweden, half the size, twice the dynamism.
I love Malmo. I gave an address there, and it's right across the bridge from Copenhagen. And Copenhagen just got about 3 Best City Awards. But one of the things that we've tried to do in this book, in Hoosier City, is identify those global mega regions. And it's interesting that Hadley said this. We actually use the light images, the satellite images that her and her husband are producing to get our estimates. So what a great world. But the point is, there is tremendous opportunity outside of North America if you orient yourself to the right kind of place. Copenhagen, Malmo, Sydney, Melbourne, Australia, of course, London and its environment, Amsterdam. I call it in the book Ambrustwerp. Another, trying to be a little bit humorous with the names, but I think you have to go to an open-minded place that's open to outsiders, that has a large flow of people in, like Malmo does. And I think, I'll tell you, one of the best decisions I ever made is moving to Canada. Because it's been a tremendous growth experience. We think that Canadians and Americans are very similar. Some ways they are. But we're also very different. So I think a move to a Malmo for somebody is a tremendous global experience and a tremendous growth experience. So I'd encourage it.
And you also argue in your book that these mega regions are, in fact, so dominant culturally, economically, and a lot of other ways that in some ways, you say, a place like Shanghai, China, has more in common with New York City than New York City might have with Louisville, Kentucky.
you know, I think it goes back to Hatley, and I think Malmo, Sweden, probably has more in common with a Denver or a San Jose than it does with a rural area in the middle of America or Sweden. And I find this quite challenging because I do believe that our society is my friend Bill Bishop wrote this remarkable book, The Big Sort. Our societies are sorting. People with ambition, with means, with talent are clustering in urban centers, and many other people are being left behind in more rural areas and parts of the country. So, yes, I think we're talking about these mega regions that are culturally and sociologically, not only economically similar, but they're similar in terms of lifestyle and people's attitudes. So, yes, I think it's easier, certainly than it was 20 or 30 years ago, to move across the peaks of the world economy.
We're talking with Richard Florida about his book, Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy is Making Where to Live the Most Important Decision in Your Life. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Jan. Jan's with us from Hilton Head in South Carolina.
Yes, and thank you so much for taking my call. I had something else I wanted to say, but I wanted to preface this with I've lived in Denmark. I lived actually in North Aarhus, and you have to get used to living a good part of your life with no light, because come winter time, the peak of winter, there is no light from morning till night. And part of the reason that I left Denmark was that there were certain things I could not acclimate, but this actually has nothing to do with why I called, and I've just been sitting on the phone listening to you all, and I thought I would just comment to that. I'm a medically trained massage therapist and moved to Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, because it's a resort area, and it's very good for people who are very talented in massage and such. But I am spiritually starved. I am emotionally starved. I'm living in the white bread capital of the United States, and it's all pretty, and there's a lovely beach, and people are polite, but there is a certain quality to life that I am starving for that I'm not getting here. And I'm a person who grew up in Washington, D.C. A picture from me from the 60s is very well known. I'm the girl that's holding the flower while the soldiers are pointing their rifles at me.
Oh, and
somebody has been.
Yeah. We've all seen that picture. Go ahead.
Yeah. But I'm somebody who's been very involved and who's been involved in political processes and this and that. And I do some community service here, but basically it's like beating my head against the wall to try and motivate people. People are very self-satisfied here.
And where are you thinking about moving, Jan?
Well, quite honestly, I've had an inspiration lately because I do feel like I have an important voice, and I'm seriously thinking about Los Angeles, and I was thinking about doing stand-up comedy, but comedy with conscience.
Is she making a good decision, do you think, Richard?
I think Los Angeles would be a great place for you, and the book talks about these personality types, and we mentioned it a couple minutes ago, but this young fellow, Jason Renfro, he's truly a genius in psychology. We know that there are five personality types, and I know you're one just listening to you. There's conscientious people, there's extroverts, there's agreeable people, there's emotionally stable or conversely neurotic people. You're not that. And there's a group of people who are many of the callers called open to experience. Open to experience people, when we map them, and they're on the maps in the book and at the website, they're like pinpoints on a map of New York, Washington, Boston, Seattle, L.A., San Francisco. Open to experience people need new energy. They need diverse experiences. They need to be around exciting environments naturally, socially. And what we're finding is that it's not like you're going out and saying, I want to find open to experience people. You're looking and searching for a place that has that environment with others like you. Los Angeles is one of the top destinations. And just finally, when you said light, one of the things we found is that so many people are drawn to natural environments that are not only light, but have blues and greens. And it's not so much cold, but it's the blues and greens. So I think from everything you're saying, you are an open-to-experience kind of person. And the other thing, finally, Neil, you'll get a kick out. Jason has identified the NPR listener as a specific subset of the open-to-experience person and in his research. So I think the callers reflect that, but there are a group of regions that we talk about in the book that are a better fit And although I like vacationing in Hilton Head, it is not the best fit for someone with your personality profile.
I have to bow to your wisdom because most of my life I've identified myself as an experientialist. And I do. I go in for the – I really try to dig into the meat of life. I really try to live life to the fullest, but with a conscience, because my social consciousness is the number one raison d'être in my life.
Jen.
But you're really on the money. You're amazing.
Good luck to you, Jen. Appreciate the
phone call.
Thanks
so much.
And Richard, I'm sorry, I hung up on her. Richard Florida, say, stay with us if you would. We're going to take a couple of more calls after a short break. And we're also going to be talking about Tiger Woods, maybe the most famous knee in the country right now. We'll talk about his surgery and, well, the dominance that he's had in his sport. Amazing finish at the Open this past week. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's continue our conversation with Richard Florida about his new book, Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy Makes Where to Live the Most Important Decision of Your Life. And let's even get another caller on the line. This is Carrie. Carrie with us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hello.
Hi, Carrie. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Hi. I'm here in San Antonio. My husband is an Army physician, and we are 1 year away from ending his commitment to the Army. And I've always been very excited about being able to pick wherever we'd like to live. And now we're thinking about it, and it is so hard to try to figure this out. We do have young children, and we like San Antonio. There's a lot to do here, but we find that for our kids, we have to drive 30, 40 minutes to get to a park that's shady and safe for them. And it is a big, sprawling city now, and there's not that strong identity in our area. Where would you suggest we look?
Well, you have to take the place finder. I mean, that's the first thing you have to do on the website at whosyourcity.com. You have to do it. But for families with children, quite strikingly, and I'm looking at our list, this is overall, not saying it'll fit you. Uh-huh. Number one is the Washington, D.C. region. Number two is Boston. Number three is the San Jose. Number four is the New York metro, not just the city. Number five is San Diego. Then we have smaller ones. So those would be some to consider of smaller places, a place like Ventura, California, Raleigh, North Carolina, Provo, Utah, Boulder, Colorado. But the key is, what's the place that fits you and your family best? Mm-hmm. And that's what we tried to do in the Place Finder. It's 10 or 12 questions. You take them, you put in some city names, some suburb names, and it tries to generate a profile of a place that you would like, possibly like, and fit the best.
Carrie, you'd think it'd be just a tremendous risk to your kids might grow up to be Red Sox fans. You know, that's just awful.
There are worse things, even for a New Yorker.
the idea, though, your husband's a physician. You can move, I would think, just about anywhere you want.
Yes, and at first we thought that would make it so easy, and you were just finding that it's not. It's not. There's a lot to consider. I'm grateful for this to be able to check out this website and the Place Finder, because we really have been struggling.
The thing I was so amazed by was that no one is willing to give people this advice. And that's why I tell the story about my editor saying, I want to give advice. And my friend saying, you can't write self-help. You can't give advice. Well, I said, no one has ever done this. And as we're hearing from all the callers, it's almost we have too much choice. And we have to look at this compendium of places. Well, let's try to make it a little bit more rational and simpler and straightforward. And this is exactly why I tried to write the book. And hopefully you'll find it helpful.
Good luck, yes. Carrie.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. And one last call. We'll try Sloan. And Sloan's with us from Boulder in Colorado.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
How are you today?
Very well, thanks.
Well, I love Boulder. My husband and I have been here 11 years. We met when I lived in Blanding, Utah. He went to graduate school in Fort Collins, Colorado. I'm from Denver. He's from Cortez, Colorado, from Fort Collins. We ended up in Holland, Michigan, and by luck, we ended up in Boulder, Colorado, which I absolutely love, and he's not too crazy about it.
And what do you do there?
I'm sort of a household goddess, but I sewing, and I work in one of the last independent fabric stores on the Front Range, and I also do costuming and makeup for high school productions.
And what does your husband not love about it?
He doesn't like the city. He doesn't like, I guess he would prefer to see the Rocky Mountains from the west side looking towards the east.
Huh. He wants the sun to rise up in the Rockies and not set in them.
Correct.
Okay.
And he just doesn't like the congestion of all the people. And Boulder's not that bad.
I was going to say, I've been to Boulder, and it doesn't hold a patch to Washington, D.C. in terms of congestion or traffic.
And I've lived in D.C., too. I worked at the Smithsonian for a while, and we commuted from Front Royal. It was crazy.
You have to pack a breakfast and a lunch for that commute.
That's right. And now he comes home for lunch every day. And I don't, you know, sometimes I'm just astounded that he doesn't like it here. And we're debating about when he retires, what we're going to do and where we're going to move.
Oh, well, that's an interesting point. Richard, Florida, you do point out in different stages of your life, well, different places hold different attractions. Richard, I think we just lost because it's 45 minutes after the hour, and we lost our studio in Toronto in Canada. So we'll have to leave you with that piece of advice, and I'm sure Richard would say you want to check out his city finder.
I'm going to. It looks like it'll be interesting.
And good luck to you and your husband.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to talk to you.
And I think that's at HoosierCity.com, and we thank you for your call, Sloan, and wish you the best of luck. And we thank Richard Florida for his appearance today, and we apologize for our technical glitch. Coming up, we're going to be talking about Tiger Woods. Stay with us.